All right, so we're going to talk about interactive data applications with Endeca. And just for background, I am an engineer at Endeca, so I have a lot of experience working with this product and hopefully can help the other people who might consider using it understand how it might be applied and how you'd actually go about using it. So when we're talking about interactive data applications, I wanted to start off by giving an agenda. So we're going to talk about a lot of things today, that some of which you haven't seen before. So I'm going to start by talking about what this tool is used for, talk a little bit about terminology, just so that we're on the same page about what I mean when I say certain things, XML, what source data is versus the sort of Endeca application. We're going to talk about source data in particular, so where you might get your information if you wanted to build an app. So I know that one of our audience members is considering building an app out of data from a radio station. So what are the songs that were played and what time and so forth? That might be considered a source of source data. The other things we're going to talk about are what the experience is like with an Endeca application just out of the box, as well as how you might build a richer application using web services and XQuery technologies. And then we'll wrap up by just talking about, if you do want to use this stuff, how you would go about getting started. So for CS50, we have a license for using Endeca, and we can figure out how you would actually go about getting access to that. So let's jump right in with some of the core concepts. But actually, before we do that, let me bring up some example web pages. So one of the exciting things for me about being able to show this stuff is that it really does get used out in the real world. So if you go to a site like HomeDepot.com and you search for a word, let's say washers, you're immediately using the Endeca product. And what Endeca is doing for you here, if I come over to the screen, is it takes the word that you searched for and it says there's a whole lot of results that matched those words. But it also gives you a lot more information because it says there's categories that you might be interested in looking at. It tells you also, in addition to categories, price ranges, and if we scroll down, there's even more information that you could use to disambiguate your search. And the real idea behind what we're doing here is we've built an application, or really HomeDepot.com has built an application, that lets people find data from the Home Depot source data. And their source data is items they want to sell, and so they want to give people an experience where they don't just get back a list of results, and you can see they're laid out in a grid here, all these different washing machines. They don't want to go and set something up like this if, in fact, people are looking for something very particular. So they want people to find what they're looking for, not get lost, and be able to navigate around the data set. So this is applicable to selling things online. It's applicable also to all kinds of other problems. This is a really cool site that recently got released by the Financial Times, which lets you look at information from all kinds of different media sources. So if we search for, let's say, Obama, what they do is they go out and they find that they have access in the Financial Times library to over 59,000 articles that contain the word Obama. But they let you refine your search by choosing from organizations, from places, from people. And what they're doing here is they've gone and pre-processed a lot of their articles to pick out, what are these terms that are meaningful that people might want to navigate by. And they've done a really great job of being able to identify articles by the places involved, the organizations that are referenced in those articles, and really what they're about. So, if we're looking at articles about Obama, we can say, well, we're interested in what Obama has to say about Russia, or where those two things intersect. And you can see that we've narrowed down the set of articles, and they've done some other really neat things which aren't really specific to Endeca, but you might want to check out just as a plug to a kind of a cool website, in that they have these charts on the side where they're looking at the sentiment analysis. How many of the articles seem to have a negative bias versus a positive bias? And you can see that most of the articles out there about Obama and Russia are either negative or neutral. There's not many that seem to have a lot of glowing things to say. So kind of neat stuff. But the reason I brought up a couple examples before we jump into building your interactive data applications is to give you some sense of why this is an interesting problem. It's an interesting problem because people like Financial Times, people like Home Depot, people like students in this room have access to data that they want to be able to navigate through. They want to be able to pick apart that data. They want to be able to do analysis like with the charts that we had there. And they want to help people find the things that they're looking for in their data. And this is something that isn't just a search problem. You don't want to just type in search terms and get back the documents that match. You also then want to be able to further refine or to be sort of led to good conclusions based on what's actually in the data. So really data-driven analysis is made possible by the Endeca product. So this isn't actually a sales pitch about Endeca. This is a sales pitch for you guys to be able to build cool projects. So I want to now switch gears and start talking a little bit more technically. And so to do that, I want to talk about what are the basic concepts we need to have in mind to be able to build an application like this. So essentially, to go from an idea, you know, hey, I want to be able to let people figure out what songs have been played recently. I want them to be able to find out information about songs that were played on the radio. Go from that idea to an actual application that helps people do that. So to kick that off, I'd start by just talking about some of the concepts that we're going to be assuming for the next hour or so. The first one is source data. So my presumption is that if you want to build an application, you're going to need to get at the data somehow. So if you have in mind that you wanted to build a better tool for selecting courses, then you need to get access to the course catalog. You need to get access to potentially data from the QGuide. You've got different sources of information that you want to bring together and give people access to those pieces of data. So the source data typically will come in a few forms, XML, or tables. These are two places that you would typically look. So tables, I mean database tables. And when you're thinking of applications you might build, you should definitely consider whether you have the data or you just have an idea for how to get the data, and make sure you turn that into reality that you actually can get the data before you try and build the application. So this is an important thing to understand. And we'll look at in a minute at some examples of source data so that you have some sense of what I mean and what you should be looking for in your data. So we're going to take these in reverse order and start with database tables. So I've grabbed some data, and I actually have a lot more than we see here, that represents bottles of wine. So you can imagine if you were, you know, a 21-plus student who had a nice wine collection, you would be thinking about your wine cellar, and maybe you want to, you know, create that catalog. Or more likely, probably you are a wine store and you want to sell these bottles of wine. So you probably have somewhere in a database all of the things that you have that are for sale. So what I've shown here are information about the bottles of wine. So if we look at the screen here, we can see a Microsoft Excel representation of a database table. So every horizontal row here represents a bottle, or in the parlance of databases, is a record. And every column, so every vertical line here, is an attribute of the data. So this would be a field in your database. We'll also refer to these as properties or dimensions of your records. And I'll talk more about that as we move along here. So in this example, I've got six records. And each of these bottles of wine has a name associated with it, the winery that it comes from, the type, is it a red wine or a white wine? And so this is one source of data that you might have. Now, some interesting things to call out as we're looking at our source data is that if I look at these last few fields, they're all called P flavors. So there's an idea that you might have that a bottle of wine might be associated with multiple flavors. So one thing that you're going to be able to represent in an Endeca application if you want to is that a given record may have multiple assignments from the same property or dimension. So this first bottle of wine is considered a berry-flavored wine, as well as having notes of cedar and cherry and coffee. On the other hand, this one, the Allée I apologize for my Spanish lack of pronunciation. Aleia Marques from Parchette is earthy and melony, but doesn't have these other flavors assigned to it at all. So you might have jagged data. It may be non-rectangular in that it's not all uniform. So this is something that you can easily represent in your application, and you can give access to people to data that may or may not fit nicely into a database table. So here's one source of data. Another that we might want to look at is something representing something represented in an XML tree. Now, if we look at this, at these records, it's easy to see where we might want to have some hierarchical information. And I say hierarchical information because XML is a tree-structured document that lets you represent relationships between things that have parent-child relationships. So here I have my bottles of wine that have red wines and white wines. If you know much about wines, then you probably realize that most people have certain associations between kinds of red wines. That if we wanted to, we could write a tree that represents the wine type. Which might have red wines as well as white wines. But these aren't the only choices you could make about a bottle of wine. So a red wine might be a particular kind, like a Merlot. And there's, of course, many, 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 many different kinds of red wines. But there is this relationship that a bottle of wine, we might want to, you know, have it be a specific Merlot, but capture that information that a Merlot is a red wine, which is an example of one of our wine types. So there's information that is table-driven as well as potentially hierarchical that we may want to bring together to build an application. And this is something that is definitely doable in Endeca, and I just wanted to call this out, that my expectation is that when you're building your application, you might have source data from both hierarchies like this as well as tables that are more rectangular. And I can think of lots of other examples for what you might do with hierarchical data. So you might consider building a tree to represent the files that you have on disk. If you wanted to create an application for finding the files that you have on your machine, then one hierarchy you might have that you would think about would be the directory hierarchy. You know, some particular file, like let's say speller.c, lives within pset 6, which lives within CS50, which lives within, you know, the My Documents directory on your Windows machine. So you could imagine having a record that you ultimately would want to let people find when they're searching through your data, that you could that would have this hierarchical information associated with it. Does that make sense? Okay. So, yeah.
Well, using Endeca, you said you can mix tables and trees.
So with Endeca, we can blend those two things. So we can say, so if we look at this example here, this would be some piece of source information, right? So we're saying we're able to get what are the list of all the bottles that we have, and we can see that this is a red wine. Now, if we look at the more complete, I cut this down just to make it fit on the screen better, but the more complete information would have the fact that this particular bottle wasn't a red, it might be a Merlot. And so what you would want to do is say, take all this information that talks about records, that comes from a table, and combine it with this hierarchical information so that I say, you know, if there is a red wine, or if I have a red wine, it's associated with this point in the hierarchy. And so you can bring those together. And that lets you do something like what I started to show on HomeDepot.com. If we flip backwards here, where when we're shopping for things, a record might be assigned with some particular value which lives within a set of choices. So for example, if we zoom in on one of these categories, for example, appliances, we can see that appliances then has follow-on choices that we can make about, you know, what kinds of washers are available. And that's sort of a child of an appliance, is a specific kind of washer. So there's those kinds of relationships. And what we end up doing is saying, here's a record, you know, for example, this Maytag 5.0 cubic feet capacity washer, it's going to have on it that it is a top load washer, which is a value that it might appear in some hierarchy represented in XML. Does that make sense? Do you have any other questions?
No.
Okay, so So that's the idea behind source data. If we flip back, the idea is if you can find your source data, then you can use Endeca provided tools to bring that data together to create your application. And what you're creating in your application, if we look up at the concepts I have under Endeca data, you're going to be creating what are the records you want people to be able to find. So in the case of Home Depot, those are records that have information about something they're selling as well as details about the thing they're selling. NewsSift, it was articles as well as information about who is mentioned in those articles. For potentially a song database search application, it might be information about a particular song, and that might include information about when it's played, or you might think about it differently, and your records might be something like when a song was played, where a detail of that is what song it was that was played. So the ninth song of the day had this name, rather than the song being sort of your primary record type. So we have this idea, though, of records, which we can think of as being like rows. The difference here is that we know that we're going to be bringing together XML and potentially database tables, which gives us the idea that it's not necessarily going to be purely rectangular data. And one of the nice things about the data model provided by Endeca is that you can have things like multi-assign, and you don't need to break it across multiple tables, which is something you typically do have to do with a relational, if you want to have a unspecified number of multi-assignments. That's something you typically break across multiple tables in a SQL database. So you're going to have records, you're going to have properties and dimensions, and dimension values. So I said before that our column headers were properties and dimensions, and I sort of use those interchangeably. The difference between that generic use of the word property and dimension and the Endeca version of those words is that when you're talking about Endeca data, in Endeca, a property is a field that may have text in it that you can search on. It might also have just a numeric value, but it's not something that participates in that refinement process that we saw. So it wouldn't generate a menu on the left-hand side. A dimension is simply a field that does have that potentially hierarchy, but participates in the selection process, so you can refine by it. So these are, when we talk about properties and dimensions, we're really talking about column headers, and the distinguishing factor between them is whether or not we can refine by a value in that column or not. And dimension values are the actual things you can refine by. So, you know, if we had a bottle of wine and it's a Merlot, Merlot would be our dimension value, and wine type might be our dimension. Is that clear? Okay, so I just want to make sure we got the sort of core concepts out of the way so that we can then talk about how this actually works and look at how an application might get built. So I hypothesized that I have more data than I'm showing you here, and in fact I do. If we open up this other table, I've extracted, just for this Excel spreadsheet, the first 1,000 bottles of wine that are in my theoretical wine cellar. And they have, you can see, a lot more properties than I had in my example. So these properties include, you know, the wine name, what winery, a price, when it was reviewed. Here we can see a little bit of this hierarchy that we have reds that are Alencars or something like that, whites that are Semillon, Sauvignon, Blancs. And we also have, and this is more a little bit interesting, we have a long description. You can see it's even cut off here, but we have a lot of text. So you can imagine, you know, someone like NewsSift from the Financial Times has long articles. And this is going to let us, you know, by having this kind of text, drive the experience of not just making selections, but also doing things like text search. So find me the wines that, you know, people say are appealing, something like that. So this is one of our sources of information for this application. And then we have another one, which I'm going to bring up here as well. And I just wanted to bring up the fact that we do have a dimension XML file So I had drawn on the board a example of what a tree might look like describing wine types. And we have encoded here in an XML file basically the same information, and that we have at the top a wine type, and you can see the nesting sort of comes this way to the right. You don't need to look at too much of the detail of this, but one of the wine type's subvalues is red, and one of its subvalues is Beaujolais and Bordeaux and Cabernet Franc, which are all kinds of red wines. So we have the tree that we drew on the board before, and we have a representation of it in XML. So with these two pieces of information, we can then put them together and build an application that will let us make choices from these selections, that will let us also do searching, will let us look at the details of a bottle of wine. So with just this source information and the Endeca tools, we can put this together into a full application. So the way that that works, and the way that you configure this, is using first a piece of application technology that you would run on your computer to build your application. And here I've already opened up my sample wine data set. And you can lay out things like what your properties are. So you can see here that I have different properties that I'm going to want on my record. So the body, so the text, body text, the date reviewed, you know, things like the flavors and the names. And one of the things to call out here is that you specify when you set this up what the types are going to be. Are they integer values like you would have for the year? Are they alphanumeric? So is it a string, essentially? Is it floating point, as you would have if we looked at the price? And these are all configurable. So I've gone ahead and said I'm going to have all these in my application. I've also called out some dimensions. So what are the attributes of my wine records that I want to be able to refine by? So the wine type, which we've looked at, things like the vintage, so that's what year it's from, are all things that you might want to make selections based on. So I've set these up. And so I've said, essentially, to my Endeca system, here are the column names that I'm interested in loading in. And then the last piece of what I need to do here, and I'm skipping over some of the more complicated stuff that people typically do when they're building a full website, because we're not at the point yet where we need to worry about doing advertising or having promotions pop up. The part we do care about, besides setting up our column names, is the pipeline of our data. So the pipeline that we have here is going to essentially be the data flow that happens from at the top or near the top here, loading our main data, so from the Excel spreadsheet, or it's actually represented as a text file, from our type dimension, other dimensions up there. Essentially, we're going to tell the system where to find that information, and then we have a few little transformations, which I'm not going to go into too much detail on now, but are documented, and you can look at some examples if you decide you want to work with this stuff. Brings together the information, and it ultimately ends here at the bottom with an indexer adapter. So this brings us to another core concept, which is what does it mean to have data that needs to be indexed, which I'll get to in a minute. Before we do that, I just want to demonstrate here that what I've configured is I've told it where to find information about dimensions, so that there's a file called dimensions.xml that I refer to. That wine type, wine type dimension.xml file that I opened for you, you can see I refer to it here. So I basically lay out all this information, and then I also need to specify at the end where the data is going. And so I've said, wherever I run this, look in the parent directory for something called partition 0. Partition 0 is just specifying the fact that I'm only going to have one copy of this data. I'm not breaking it up across potentially multiple machines. And put the output in something called forge output. So there's a lot of material there in a very short amount of time. The idea here is that if we flip back to our core concepts, to go from having those source data files to having a running system that's loaded with that data, we need to go through a few processes. So these are processes that you would run if you were building an application. The first one is to do your data preparation. And this is essentially to take that pipeline that I just showed you and feed your data into it, have it run through that process. And we have a program that you run, you point it at that pipeline as represented by a file, and it will go and bring together those various input sources to produce records that have the sort of conglomeration of all that material. Once you've done that, you're ready for indexing. So this is what I was alluding to before when I mentioned the indexer adapter. So while it's nice that we had our table, which I showed you before, and I'm going to bring up again. While it's nice that we have this conceptual model of a database table, it turns out that to answer queries quickly, you want to be able to say what is the value from the pwine field for a given record. For a given record ID. So we want to be able to quickly find out what value was assigned to a record from any given field. And we're going to end up having indexes, just like you would in a book, for all the different fields that exist in our table. And this is also something that exists in MySQL and other databases. This is how you get fast access to the data in your record. We have a second thing that we're going to build, which is an inverted index. Let me just drag this over so you can see it better. And what this is, and this is kind of interesting, is take a given value and tell me all of the record IDs where it appears. And what this lets you do, and this happens under the covers of Endeca as well as other search engines, for example, is to let people make selections or go and put in a search term, you know, actually type in a word for themselves, and get back very quickly what are all the records that contain that word that you searched for or are contain that selection that you made. So the idea is that we want to go through a process before we set up a server and before we're ready to build our application that will build these indexes for us so that then we can run an Endeca server that can answer queries very quickly. So this is why in my concepts I had first doing data preparation, which is going to bring our data together, and then indexing, which is going to go and build the data structures on disk that are necessary to quickly answer queries. Does that make sense? All right. Do you have any questions up to this point? Yep. So there's definitely a lot more detail here, right, to actually use this stuff. But I want to take you through the concepts so that you'll have some sense if you look at the documentation or if you're trying to puzzle through what you need to do of the kind of process you'd be going through. So don't worry if you don't have all the detail, you know, right off the bat. Remember that this is a product that, you know, people build sites like HomeDepot.com off of. They're not something that people pick up in an hour and become experts on. Jumping back to the tool, when we're looking at the columns that we set up that were dimensions, there are some columns that were marked with a yellow icon and some that were not. And the ones with the yellow icon, I was just pointing out, if you look to the right, say AutoGen, and this is an Endeca-specific thing, but the idea is that these are all columns that you can refine by, that you can narrow your data by making choices from. The ones that say AutoGen were not necessarily specified in an XML file. In fact, they were not set up by the user. Instead, when we go through and process the records, we're saying, this is an interesting column for us to, from our table, to turn into a dimension for making selections from. So auto-generated dimensions would be in the case where you haven't gone and actually built out a taxonomy and put it in an XML file, but you'd like to take those values that you happen to see on your records and make them available for refining. So this means that we're not forcing you to do a bunch of work to go and build that XML file if you're happy to just take whatever's in each of those assignments on each of the records and use it as a flat set of choices. So flipping back, we've talked about data preparation and indexing. What I want to actually do is flip over to a console window and just demonstrate for you that if I copy those files over to a server, and in particular, I'm running on endeca.cs50.net here. We have a VM set up for using the software. So I said that the first process you need to go through is the data preparation, which I called Forge, and that's just the name of the product that we have for doing data preparation. If you run from the Endeca installation the program called Forge, and you point it at the pipeline file, which gets saved out by that developer studio tool, then it will go and read through that file, figure out where the other pieces of source information are. And if we run this, it's a little bit big, hard to read here, but you can see it's processing records, and it's giving us a huge amount of sort of information about what it's doing. But what we really care about is you get to the end, and it says that it completed with no errors and a couple of warnings, which we're not gonna worry too much about for this demo. But what's interesting is if we look at that directory that I had told you about before, which was in partition 0, if we look in the Forge output directory, we've gotten a number of files created for us that capture the information that was in our configuration tool, as well as in the XML file and the table that I showed you. And we've even written out, if you look here at the bottom, a binary representation, so a binary file that contains all of our record data. So this, there's no magic to this. It's gone and so far just combined together the information that we had provided in our various files. The special sauce starts to come into play when we run the next program, which is our indexer. So this is a program that we call DGIDX, and the IDX there is short for index. We're again running this out of our Endeca installation. We're telling it where to find the Forge output, which was in the directory called partition 0 Forge output, the wine files in there. And it's going to take that input data. It's going to build those indexes I was talking about, you know, so you can do text search, so you can do fast selections from these menus, and write out the files necessary to then start up the server and let people start playing around with it. So if I run this command, it's going to do a lot, actually it turns out a fair amount more work than we just did with our data preparation, because it's not just combining things together, it's going through all the text fields and it's turning those into what it needs to do text search. You can see it's now read in all of our records. We have 57,000 bottles of wine here. It's merging things together to actually build these essentially large hash tables that let it do search, let it do this navigation. So we can see that with 50,000 records, we're able to do that in about 30 seconds, build the tools, build the files that support an application. And then we get to the point where we say, okay, great, we've prepared our data, we've indexed it. Well, what did indexing it do? I said it built these data structures. One of the big things that's a transition from what you've learned in class so far to thinking about using databases or writing databases at some point in your potential future is that oftentimes the data structures you represent in memory need to get out to disk so they can be used for follow-on work. And in this case, that's exactly what we've done. We've created a number of files on disk that will support the operation of a special kind of server, which we call the MDEX engine. And this is something that Endeca has that will serve requests. So in the same way that we used MySQL query to make queries to a database server that was sitting somewhere in the last few assignments, we have an engine that does something similar. But instead of taking SQL, it has its own language for talking about doing text search and doing navigation. In the same way that if you were, you know, if you snuck into the Google laboratory, you wouldn't find a bunch of SQL servers. You'd find their own servers that take in HTTP requests, you know, web requests, and give you back what the things are that match on particular terms. So we're ready to start up our engine. So let's flip back to the console window. And we're going to run one last command. And this command is what we call the dgraph. That's the name we have for our product. It's the dynamic graph. The idea here is that you're making selections from all these trees. You can think of it as being sort of a graph from the graph theory sense, that you're sort of making choices and you're walking through a space of potential record sets. I'm going to start it on HTTP in this server on port 5555. So this is a TCP port. I'm going to write the output to a log file. So if something were to go wrong, I can look at that file to see what's going on. And I'll get to the details of this in a minute, but I'm also setting up an XQuery path. And then I'm pointing the server at the files that I just wrote out. So if I run this command, and actually, just to show I don't have any tricks up my sleeve, before I do this, I'm going to flip over and show you that I don't have anything running currently on endeca.cs50.net 5555. If I try and access that URL, there's nothing there. But now I'm going to kick off this server, and I'm running it in the background, so it's not going to print anything out, and that's because I used the ampersand there. And if I flip back, if I keep my fingers crossed, because this is a live demo, you can see that now when I go to this port and I ask for statistics about the server, it starts right up and gives me some information telling me that it's running some particular version of our product. It's saying it's had one request received, which was the request for this page that you see here. If we take a look, we can see that currently the throughput, the rate at which it's answering queries is pretty slow. It hasn't actually answered any queries, so it's running at zero requests per second. But the server's up and running. So the server's up and running. This is great. How do we actually now get access to the data? So it turns out that in addition to giving you this server, there's a set of web pages that we've built which are generic. They are built in Java using Java Server Pages, which is a competitor, I guess, to PHP, as well as Active Server Pages from Microsoft. And we've built a web application that you can use to talk to any Endeca server and walk around its data. It dynamically generates the menus that are necessary to do the kinds of refinements like you saw at Home Depot and NewSIF to make those choices. So let me bring that up. So now if I type in the name of the machine and the port and I hit go, we can see that we're talking to a server that has 57,000 records loaded into it. This application is both ugly in that it's kind of this hideous color and also not necessarily laid out for the best user experience, but it also has no particular data in it about wine. So it's not saying there are 57,076 matching bottles of wine. It's saying records, because it thinks of it as just being a generic database tool. In the same way that something like PHP MyAdmin is something that you can use to look at the rows in your database without writing a particular line of SQL yourself. So if we flip through and we look at what we have here, we're getting back the top 10 alphabetically bottles of wine. And let me just make this font a little bit bigger for the camera. So if we look at a particular bottle, you can see that these various properties that we laid out now appear here, as well as the dimension values, like what the review score was. But in addition to having details on the record, we also got on the left-hand side, and this is something that's very common if you are a user of the web, you're used to probably seeing things like this. You can see that there are choices here that you can make. And as you'd expect, if you click on those, they're going to expand, and you can make selections. So our wine type, if we open it up, we can choose red. We also have, you can see, sparkling here as well as white. If we choose red wines, we've reduced the number of records that match. And we can see that under wine type now, the choices are different kinds of red wines. So we've sort of walked down that hierarchy. We can make choices from red wines and then look at what are the vintages that are still available. So one of the interesting things here is that you're never going to get to a dead end. We're never going to show you, for example, a region, if we flip over here, that doesn't have red wines from 1995. The only regions that would show up here at query time are going to be the ones that match the criteria so far. So it's a nice experience if you're someone looking around at this data. So This works for wines, but it works equally well for articles. It works equally well for washers and dryers and everything else that Home Depot sells, as well as whatever other ideas you might have, be it courses as your records or songs from a radio station or whatever else. So this is the idea. We've basically gone through looking at source data. We've gone through loading it into the system, looking a little bit at how you'd configure such a system, what kind of processes you'd need to run to generate the files, to run the server, to ultimately build this really ugly application. So we'll look in a minute at moving from this idea of a reference application, a reference UI, to something that's more tailor-made for your needs. But before we do that, I wanted to give you a chance, if you had any questions, to switch gears and do something interactive.
With the way the data is loaded in, do you have to run all the, if you update your data, do you have to rerun all those processes manually to update your page then?
So that's a good question. So if we were to change some piece of our data, would we need to run through all those processes? So there's two answers to that. The first answer is you can. You could go and update your XML files, update the database tables, and then hit go on the data preparation, hit go on the indexer, rerun your server. That's certainly something you could do. And a lot of people do that. You know, if you're running Home Depot and the number of things that you're selling doesn't change a great amount day to day, you may run once a day what we call a baseline to refresh your data. If you are expecting this is constantly going to be changing, then we have facilities also to update your data by sending in a special kind of query. So you've actually seen two kinds of queries already. You saw queries that were gave you back information to fill out this page. And you also saw, fleetingly, the statistics page. So there is a special URL that you can go to that if you visit it will give you information about the running server. The server also accepts other kinds of URLs, one of which is to do an update, and you would provide it with information about the update, and there's various ways to do that. And so if that is something you end up wanting to do, you can look to the documentation for that, or also feel free to send me an email, and I can help you figure out how to do that with the product. So our core concepts, we've gone through what kind of data we're dealing with, what we need to run. You've also seen along the way that there's that one of the core things you need to understand here is that there's the developer side of things where you are laying things out in this tool. We have a server that's set up. It's a VM called endeca.cs50.net. That's where we ran the more heavy-duty processes that do the data processing. That's where we also are running our server, which then is available on the internet. So those are the sort of core ideas. Now, if we jump back to the agenda, I told you that we were going to talk about source data and then the basic Endeca experience with the reference application. The reference application that I'm referring to here is what I've just shown you. It's a tool that, given any data set loaded into an Endeca server, will let you click around, find what's in your data. It will let you look at what choices you can make. We could have also clicked through to look at the details of one of those records because you don't necessarily need to configure your system so that every field, every property or dimension is visible on a record. You can push some things to be only on like a detail page. So I wanted to switch gears and talk a little bit about some other technologies, web services and XQuery in particular. So the reason I wanted to do that is because you're probably asking yourself, why are you showing me an ugly UI when we live in the modern age and there's much more attractive web applications that you can build? So you could certainly build a more attractive web application even just using the tools that we've given you. You could go and rip apart those pages. You'd see that it looks like Java, which is not so different than PHP or C. That's a language that you could look at, Java server pages. And you could do that. You could build your own Java-based web application that makes calls through our programming interface into our server. You could use our reference application as a model. But another thing that you might consider doing is using something called web services. So this is not something that's Endeca specific. This is a generally applicable concept to any budding programmer out there. So web services essentially are functions you can call over the web. It's a form of remote invocation. If you've heard of things like RPC, it's sort of the more modern version of that. So have you ever heard of web services? So web services are becoming increasingly popular. People talk about typically SOAP-based web service, which is one kind of protocol for speaking web services. So web services basically let you stand up a server and make it so that someone can call a function over the net. The reason that's interesting is that means that you can go build your PHP-based application, or you could use Python or Java or whatever language, and you could say, you know, I'm going to lay out my page like this, and I want to fill in some piece of information here by asking some server far away about for that. And that server might be, you know, in our case, an Endeca application. And what we've done at Endeca is we've said, well, okay, we have this technology that lets you interact with data. Let's make that available to you as a web service, but let's go one better. Let's not just provide a function that lets you specify as inputs, you know, the choices you've made about your data, and we'll give you back the data. Let's also make it possible for you to write your own web service so that you stand up this server, and now it's running your code. So you can write a piece of code and have it available as a web service that can be invoked from your front-end web application or from somewhere else. The way we've done that is using a language called XQuery. So again, not an Endeca-specific concept, although we have added to this language some operations that let you interact in easier ways with the Endeca data model. So XQuery is a query language for XML. It's, again, something else that's growing in popularity, although I think a little bit slower than web services, which have been around a bit longer. Have you heard of XQuery? Okay, so XQuery is definitely something that is, you know, beyond the scope of CS50. It's a complete language that lets you write programs. You can take in pieces of XML data. You can manipulate them. You can write, for that matter, something that rolls dice. You could do a lot of different things in XQuery. In the same way that when we looked at a language like PHP, we saw that it also was a language that let us do a lot of things besides just format pages. So in that way, XQuery is a lot more powerful than SQL. Not only is it intended for working with XML data, but it also is a complete language, and so you can write pretty complete scripts that, with by combining XQuery as the language for web services and Endeca with your Endeca server, you can now say, I want to create a tool that could be called from anywhere on the internet or whoever I let call it on your server pretty simply. So the one thing I wanted to digress to here is, you know, why did we pick these two technologies? So web services is a good idea because it lets people create content, put it on the web somewhere, and let other people run it. This is something that Amazon does. You know, if you decide not to use Endeca for your project, what you might find interesting is looking at web services provided by companies like Google, like Amazon, lots of other companies out there on the web that let you essentially get at their data and run things on their servers, you know, these functions, by calling something over the web. And there's tools for this in every major language to help you start with a web service definition file, so something that tells you what the inputs and outputs are, and automatically generate the code that will go and connect to the server and make the call and get the response and format it for you in a reasonable way. XQuery, also a growing and importance tool out there in the world, very good at dealing with XML. The language of web services is typically XML, but that's actually not the whole story. The other thing that's interesting is when we think about having a data model which lets us have things like flavors that may be multi-assigned, and we don't know ahead of time how many assignments there are going to be from flavors. We don't know whether or not there's going to necessarily be a region assigned to a particular bottle of wine. What we're starting to describe is a data model that's sometimes called semi-structured. And so XML is often referred to as semi-structured because it has blobs of content, you know, big text fields. But it also has descriptions like DTDs, which we've talked about previously, that describe the general layout of the document. And that language, DTD or XML schema, either of those will let you specify that your document can have essentially multi-assigned. You can say there are zero or more of flavor elements. So our records that you're going to put into an Endeca system very naturally map to XML. So you can imagine passing back a piece of information that represents some sort of record and doesn't necessarily ahead of time tell you exactly what the schema is going to be. In addition, if you think, you know, sort of longer term, one other thing that's pretty obviously applicable here is the idea that hierarchy is really baked into many Endeca applications. You know, we picked, in our example, a wine type and then picked red and then, you know, went on to pick Merlot or another similar wine type. The idea of representing hierarchy tends to be more painful if you're doing it in a relational database. You need to break it across multiple tables, whereas in XML, it's very well suited to representing hierarchical information. So for all these reasons, this was an interesting language to pick. And I think that if you start using it, you know, whether or not you use Endeca or if you look at some of the other tools that are out there for writing XQuery, if you find that you're dealing with XML, definitely check out XQuery. Look at tools like Saxon. So Saxon is a Java-based implementation of an XQuery interpreter. It's a fun language to program in, and it will definitely expand your mind a little bit because it's a little bit of a different programming model than you've seen in C. It's closer to, in many ways, to the functional programming languages, which, again, a plug for other material. CS51, great class where you do a lot of functional programming. So you definitely should consider looking at XQuery, but also, you know, looking for ways to expand the kinds of languages that you use. So these are the core concepts of building something that's richer than the application I showed you before. So what exactly does that mean? So let me switch over here for a minute. What I've done in preparation for showing you this is not only loaded wine data into my application, I've also gone and written a piece of XQuery, which I will bring up here. And I don't expect that you should look at this language, which, you know, lets you embed XML right into the middle of it and, you know, immediately can follow exactly what it's doing. But in a relatively short amount of time of code, so you can see this whole program essentially fits on one page of fairly large font. The stuff below is just an actual piece of static data that is XML. But this code here essentially says, if you give me a XML representation of a table, and you tell me that my table has certain information in it, then I can convert that into a Google approved JSON object. So we talked a little bit about JSON in the last problem set, but we didn't get too deep into it. What we're going to look at is that I've written code here that essentially creates a web service that will let us take a piece of information like this XML table and turns it into one of these Google visualization objects. So why is this interesting? Well, this is interesting because this means we could write a web service which could be the backing, it could be the data source for a lot of the stuff that's been provided out there by Google and other people to place information onto your iGoogle homepage, into web applications automatically. So let me actually demo this by running this program. So this is a static XML.xq file, that's what I called it. By creating this file that's an XQuery script and saving it into the XQuery directory, which I specified when I ran my server, then if I go to my host and port /ws for web service /static XML, it will run my script for me, and you can see what I've done here is just return back that table. So I've shown that I was able to drop a file onto my server that took some static piece of XML and just pasted it back out as XML. So to show off running my function, which I showed you, you know, fit on one screen, I go to this other web service, which just took the XML that I had, I just showed you, and goes ahead and calls a function that I wrote to convert it into a JSON object. So this is interesting. You may not realize it yet. Not because it can print, you know, a whole bunch of curly braces, but because if we go to, these already came up. If we go to iGoogle, we have this option to add stuff to my page. And if I search for maps, you know, I can see that there's all these tools that are already that are available that I can drop onto my page. Now, one of them, and you can see I've already dropped it here, is a Google Maps data connector, which I can point at different URLs. So if I were to have a typo in here, just to show that this is live, you know, I've laid something out. I told Google, go to some particular address, and it hasn't found anything. So it's kind of, it's in a stuck state. It can't show a map in that case. On the other hand, if I edit the settings for this so that it's going and talking to this address that I had right here, which is running on my Endeca server, and I go ahead and hit save, what you can see is that it took that piece of information, which specified just a string and a value, and the string that it provided was Elliott House, and it went and actually tried to look up that address that I provided. Let me just show you again, you know, this Elliott House, comma, Cambridge, Mass, 02138, and was able to find it on the map, create this little applet by just pointing it at my web service. So essentially, I provided a function to the internet that, while very boring, is live. Now people can go and say, I want to go and ask this server, where is Elliott House? It will tell them. It's Elliott House, comma, Cambridge, Mass, 02138. And one possible client for this is this tool that's provided by Google. So I've, with very little work, I showed you it was one page of code, I was able to write a chunk of information that would let Google or anyone else out there use something running on my server. Okay, so I got a good question there, and the question was, you know, does this have anything to do with the data that I was loading? And so I figured we'd flip back to the script just so we could see what's going on. And let me, in particular, go to this version of it, which is that this script encodes all of its data into it. It creates an XML table that has columns, string, and name, and had rows, only one row, that contained values Elliott House and Elliott House, and the first one had the full address. And then what I returned was calling this Google table function that I wrote and called it on my table. And that converted this static piece of XML, so meaning it's not driven by the data in the database, convert this static piece of XML into something that looks kind of like what I have here at the bottom in a comment. So this is not the most exciting script in the world, because essentially anytime you call it, no matter when you call it, no matter how you call it, it's always going to give you back the same data. It's just going to be converting this into a format that Google can use. But it's doing this through XML, which is a language that lets you embed XML right into it. A language called XQuery that lets you embed XML right into it, and also write relatively complex functions that can do interesting data conversions. With that, we're able to drive this map connector that's provided by Google. But what's interesting is if we take a look at another script that I wrote called Dynamic. So this dynamic this dynamic program that I've written here is a little bit different, because while it still defines string and name as fields, which are what Google's expecting, for rows, I have a reference here to a variable. So just like in PHP, in XQuery, you use the dollar sign when you're referring to a variable. And if we looked up above, and without teaching you XQuery, it's going to be hard to go through what all this means, but essentially, if you look at the top of the screen, I'm saying let rows, so I'm defining a variable called rows, and I'm assigning it to the result of doing some work with the actual database. So what I'm actually going to do here is I'm going to pull out the region and the name of a bottle of wine, or in this case, I'll actually do it for multiple bottles of wine, and I'm going to take that and I'm going to put that into my table. And so I've done some formatting here that will make that into my table format, so I can then call my Google table function and convert whatever table gets created dynamically based on the data into the JSON format that's expected by Google. So I now have a web service. If I flip back here, I can go ahead and run it. I'm going to run it first with XML. So if I just print out that table, I don't call my function, we can see we have a table, the columns.
I can't see that.
Okay, let me for the viewers at home, let me make this a little bit bigger. Is that readable? So we have, and I know there's a sea of XML here, but at the top line, you can see that we have string, and in the next line, name and string. We're essentially, pretty printing aside, we're starting to lay out then in the following lines our rows, where each row is a combination of a name of a wine and a location. And this is actually going to be enough for, if we convert this into a JSON object, which the web service can do for us, this is going to be enough to drive a Google gadget that's going to try and look up Alsace. It's going to try and look up Spain and Burgundy and Sonoma and do its best to locate those on the map. So again, I created two forms of this web service, one that just printed the table and the other that called my function that converts it to a JSON object. And if we look, we can see we have the same kind of data here, and I am pulling this off the server live. And so now if we come back to our gadget and we change the URL to look at dynamic and hit save, if we're lucky, we get a map of the world that has a whole bunch more push pins in it. And if we zoom in on these, let's look at Europe. You can see that they're spread across Spain. There's some in France. We also have some that, I guess, if you're between France and Germany, you're in Alsace. So there is our pop-up for an Alsatian wine. So what I was able to do was basically take the same server that's driving this experience and use it to, at the same time, also answer queries that provide back JSON objects or drive back XML. That essentially we took one server and we said, here, run these other programs on it so that you can power other pages. So the idea is that you can load in your data and then without too much effort, beyond the basics of learning XQuery and figuring out how to get your data into the right format, you can start powering a wider range of applications, whether you built the UI or whether you're taking advantage of other tools that are already out there on the web. So does that make sense? Do you have any questions at this point? All right. So just flipping back, there are definitely resources out there besides this video to help people if they want to learn about these things. Now, these are not Endeca specific. These are about learning the technologies you would use and you might apply if you were actually playing around with a project built in Endeca. So W3 Schools is a great sort of general reference to help bring you up to speed on technologies having to do with the web. They have pages for XML, for web services, and for XQuery, so you can learn some more about how these things work. You can Google to find more detail on the specifications for these things. So I said these were standard languages. These are not specific to building an Endeca application. You can look at the actual specification of the XQuery language, or look at, you know, how web services work by looking at those, or by looking at other pages out there on the web that help guide you through these things. One of the things I wanted to point out, though, was that you have a few things now that you have at your disposal to play with here. One is building web applications that load your data and provide a pretty cookie-cutter front end for browsing through the information, which is what we saw with the reference application. On the far extreme, we had using something like Google Gadgets, which you could put on an iGoogle page. You know, those of you who are just finishing your PSET 8, you know, you can also embed some of the Google things directly into other web pages. You have that kind of flexibility potentially at your disposal if you want to write your own web services. But there's an area in between. You can also use the APIs, so the programming interfaces, that are provided by Endeca, or you can write your own if you wanted to write web services to provide your own APIs to build other kinds of applications. So you could write PHP pages that go and make a call to the Endeca web service of your choice. You could write things in Java server pages and use our jar files that provide the programming interface to lay out a page for yourself. So you can do something in between. You don't necessarily need to use the reference application or these, you know, little gadgets, excuse me, that are driven by web services. You have the alternative to build your own web framework for a data-driven application. And, you know, as a plug, I wanted to point out also that there is material out there, even from CS50, on building your own applications. So one thing in particular is, you know, having web services means that you can hook in pretty easily to Flex, which is the language that people use for designing Flash movies. So you can build a rich application that makes calls to web services to bring back data, but is in that sort of slick user interface that people associate with rich applications. There is actually a seminar on that as well that Philip gave. So you may want to check that out. And I just wanted to actually bring up one more example in reference to that, so you can see sort of how people who aren't Home Depot and aren't NewSift build some really cool stuff out there. So if I Google for Nike ID, Nike has this really neat application that they've built that is definitely slick and definitely does all the Flash-like kinds of things that people associate with rich applications. If we come down here to choose your color, if we do a design search, they've let people upload designs of shoes. And this is actually something that's driven by Endeca. They have and a MDEX engine that's loaded with all the different shoes that you could possibly choose. You can see, you know, when I hover over one of them, that's Dwell's shoes. Designer was named Martris, and you can see that when it was designed, which was just a few days ago. They've got pretty rich controls, not just navigating in the way that you might think of for a typical data application, but also picking color from, you know, essentially a color wheel or, you know, color bar here, that you can actually change the things you're finding based on how you click around in here. And you can see they have over 14,000 different designs available here. So, and they also have search by word or design ID, so you can essentially navigate through data in ways that, you know, are pretty rich. And this is obviously an application that isn't built just using HTML. The experience here with the mouse overs, you know, and these scroll bars is something that's not based on, you know, just laying out an HTML table. So this kind of thing is most easily done, in my opinion, using something like Flex to generate essentially a Flash movie that gets embedded.
Do
So I was just showing the mouse over here. You can see as I hover over the various shoes, not only am I seeing the information about the design, but it's also highlighting the box, and there's a cute little fade there. And for those of you, including you, who are watching this on the projector, definitely go actually check out the site, because it's pretty neat, and the colors are not all that great on this projector. So it looks much cooler when I'm over here on my laptop, where you can see that this color bar, while it claims goes from black to blue to green, there's some red and other things that apparently aren't showing up in this particular screen. So there's a lot of richness that you can build on top of this, whether you go the Google Gadget route or not. And so just to close it out, happy to take any questions at the end. But if you weren't able to make it tonight and you do have questions about using Endeca for a final project, please send me an email. My email address is mtucker@eecs.harvard.edu. We do have license for using Endeca for final projects. While many organizations pay hundreds of thousands of dollars, potentially millions of dollars for this software, out of the generosity of Endeca and also Harvard, you can use it for nothing for your project, which is a nice thing to get you using some software from out in the wide world. So if you do have questions, please let me know. And if you do want to use it for your project, we should definitely coordinate, because you'll want access to the endeca.cs50.net server and the software that's installed on there. And I'm happy to help direct people to other resources, because besides the W3 schools things that I plugged here, there are also Endeca-specific references. We have training materials and forums and things that are specific to our product that you might want access to. So that's it for sort of the prepared material. Are there questions about how you might use this or go back and look at anything a second time?
Is there a possibility that the Endeca, since this is on the CS50 server, is that just for the final project, or could it live on past the final project?
So the question was, if we built something for a final project, could it evolve beyond the final project? That's something that we need to talk to somebody at Endeca about. The license we have is for the final projects, but there's always the possibility that we could, work something out if that was, something you were interested in. Any other questions? I feel like I'm putting people who are in the room on the spot, so I apologize. But if there's no other questions, then good luck with your final projects, and please let me know if you have any questions. Thanks.